Here we are, hitting up events, drinking our way through Chicago beer, and trying not to miss a thing.
Yeah, because, you know, got a cork popped out, boom, it flies like fucking 10 feet. We're like, yeah, let's do it.
You know, all you have to do is add some fruit, stir it up, and ride that milkshake wave.
Whenever I see him, I gotta take a photo with the most decorated brewer in Chicago, Jonathan Cutler.
It'll be like the stuff you hear. You ever go to every time you go to Floyd's, all the music sounds like this. Raw, raw, raw.
Sometimes you want a small beer, but really, you want a big beer.
You gotta take in all those big aromatic hops.
Hey, what are you doing this weekend? Waiting in line for a bottle release?
Should have never been a fad. The black IPA is delicious.
Hey, and welcome to Chicago Beer Pass. I'm Brad Chmielewski.
Brad, what's up, man? I'm Nick White.
And we got a special guest in the studio with us for St. Patrick's Day.
Very timely arrival for Mr. Jimmy Callahan.
What's going on, guys? Thanks for having me. This is awesome.
Yeah, thanks for having us. Happy to be part of it. Yeah, you brought us all kinds of goodies here. We got Guinness Foreign Extra Stout. We got Guinness Zero. We got a wild ale from Baltimore Brewery, and then we got regular Guinness.
Why don't we start off with that and do a little pouring tutorial? So, okay. This is our patented technology. 1988, we wanted to bring draft to home. So if you want to have a Guinness draft, you can do that at home. Same creamy, it's the same exact beer. So I was actually just with our global head of quality on Friday, and we don't like make one beer for cans, one beer for bottles, one beer for kegs, mm-hmm. all the same beer, and it goes off to different packaging. So when we pop this open, the widget inside is going to release a mixture of gas and beer, and that friction of releasing that pressure is going to draw the gas out of the beer, so you get the nice creamy head. So what you want to do is you're going to pop it open and listen for the widget to activate. So you're going to hear it, and then gently, 45-degree angle, you want to go as slow as possible because the widget's already done the work of bringing the gas out. So you might hear other breweries say things like pour hard and stuff, not to call anybody out, but they don't have the technology that we have.
Okay.
So if you pour hard, you're agitating more gas out of the beer than we want. So you're going to have a thinner body, also you're going to have a big, big head that we don't want either. So just gently all the way to the tip top, and you get a nice creamy head just like you would get in the bar. So
yeah, because something like the left-hand milk stout, they tell you just like dump it in and go.
First of all, if you put the can like in the glass, like there could be ambient air bacteria in here. You just put it in your beer. It's pretty gross. But also you are, like I said, thinning out the body of the beer because you're releasing too much gas. So, and you get like really big ambient air bubbles and stuff too. Mm-hmm. So sláinte, as they say in Ireland.
Sláinte.
To your health. Thanks for having me again.
Now, Jimmy, what's your title over at Guinness?
Oh, I don't work for Guinness. No, I'm just going.
Just drink it and love it.
That's funny. I am one of four brewery ambassadors that we have for the United States. Okay. So I'm based in the Chicago area. I've got 15 states I cover, and I'm in charge of education. Well, we like to say education, engagement, and entertainment, because obviously I'm very funny and personable and handsome, and so it's part of the reason why I got the job.
You know? Now, this is a serious question. Have you had any TV spots, like commercials?
My former life before being the ambassador for Guinness, I've done like over 100 commercials and TV and film stuff too. Yeah so my background's in acting, improv, and stand-up.
It's funny because I'm watching some and I'm telling my old lady, I'm like, yo, I've seen this dude before. that dude's at Guinness, this dude right here.
Yeah.
It was like a fucking, I don't know, Geico commercial or something.
Yeah, probably Progressive.
Yeah,
like
Progressive,
that,
yeah.
Like me
yeah.
and Flo. Me and yeah. Flo were tight. I'm from the Chicago area. Started off in like Second City and improv, Olympic and stuff. And then I was in LA for 4 years, New York for three, and back in Chicago once my wife and I started a family. And, you know, so every once in a while, like when time allows, I still am able to do some acting stuff. But in the meantime, I get to talk to people about beer, so it's not too bad.
Nice.
So we're drinking this one from the can here. And all we found out at this recent party that you said all of the Guinness in Chicago comes from Dublin, right?
All of our core beers. So Guinness Draft, and most people might be surprised to know that this beer has only been around since 1959. So like Arthur Guinness wasn't wasn't brewing nitrogenated stout in 1759.
Yeah, no. So we did this version of
version of our Guinness stout came around 1959. But this is brewed in Dublin, Fornicture Stout, so you have Smittix over there. Everything that we get in the United States is brewed in Dublin with the exception of Guinness Blonde and then some of our limited edition beers that we have coming out of Baltimore. So.
And so why is that when you said, what, there's 67 breweries?
There's over 60 breweries around the world, yeah.
Why?
Yeah. Why are there?
Why is the United States just coming from Dublin and not coming from some brewery in, somewhere else? I don't know where any of them are, so I'm not going to guess.
Well, yeah, so we have part of it is tradition, honestly, but part of it is, that is our main brewery, St. James Gate. We've been there since 1759. So the beer that we're making in those other breweries for the most part is going to be some variety of Guinness Extra Stout, Guinness Foreign Extra Stout. We do brew this beer in 5 countries around the world, because, eventually it makes more sense to open up another brewery than to ship it from Ireland to like New Zealand. why we get it from Ireland, we can produce 4 million pints a day in that facility if we want to. So we just don't have that capacity in the United States yet. I mean, we could brew it in the United States if we wanted to. I think there's a little bit of, there might be some backlash because of the Irish diaspora and people like it being so intrinsically tied to Ireland that people think that it's only authentic if it's brewed in Ireland, but we brew it all around the world. I mean, it's like tell somebody from Jamaica that their Guinness isn't good, you know?
Sure, yeah. So theirs isn't from...
No, we have 12 or 13 breweries in just the Caribbean islands alone.
Oh, crazy. Yeah. Okay.
We've got somewhere between like 6 to 8 breweries in Africa. 80% of all beer sold in the continent of Africa. That sounds ridiculous, so I'll say it again. 80% of all beer sold in the continent of Africa is a variety of Guinness.
Okay.
Yeah, it's wild because like we here in the States, I think we all just kind of relate to the dry Irish stout, right? The nitrogen stout. But I think our
best-selling beer worldwide is that one.
That's what I was gonna say. Like the one we all drink isn't the one that everyone else is drinking.
No, it's funny. Whenever if there's ex-Caribbean or ex-African population in the United States, they're looking for Guinness and they more often than not come across this and they're like, this isn't Guinness because they grew up on that, because we're talking about a brewery that's been around, before our country was even founded. And so we would have different beers brewed based upon the distance they were going from. It was traveling from the brewery. So we'd have like a town porter, which is light, effervescent, 3.8%, something like that. Then we'd have a country porter, slightly higher alcohol content. To survive the journey, because this is before refrigeration, before pasteurization, so those things act as natural preservatives. And then we had our West Indies Porter, which is the predecessor to that beer, that we'd send around the world. So that's the beer that made Guinness biggest beer in the world.
Huh. Crazy. And then I would never drink that.
It's wild.
Don't even gravitate towards it at all. I'm like,
most people in the United States have not had it because Prohibition kind of, it was what we were sending to the United States, until Prohibition, then that kind of messed everything up. And it never really had a strong foothold again. We only started to import it again in 2010. So that's why most people haven't even seen it. And it's only in certain distributors. So, we can get it in Chicago, but certain distributors in the suburbs, you can't get it, And certain states don't carry it. So it's kind of crazy. It's like our best-selling beer worldwide, but most people don't think of it as Guinness. This is Guinness,
right?
So. Yeah. When I first moved to Rogers Park, went to a house party with some Haitians, and my first experience with Guinness was that one.
Yeah,
7.5% like black licorice. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it was like, this is really heavy. And then as an adult, I came back around to it, and I'm like, I'm so confused. Right.
So many people will see. Some people will see this. And because of the color and because of the texture with the nitrogen and CO2, they'll think that this is really thick and heavy. But in actuality, not that that's thick and heavy, but like that's like almost double the alcohol content, it's 7.5%. We make it all the way up to like 9% in certain countries. This is only 4.2%. It's one of the lightest beers you can drink.
Right. And then combining it with a Harp doing a half and half, you're even just going real easy drinking.
Yeah, actually, Harp has more calories than this beer.
Oh, really? Yeah. Crazy.
That's why it floats over the top. Like, it's like, this is less dense and less sugar content, and so that's why it floats on top of other beers.
Hmm. Yeah. We just saw each other. We were Friday. This 2 days yes. later. We were 2 days ago. We were at the party, the preview event for Guinness West Loop. We were thinking on the, when you were on the way up here, it was like, let's talk to Jimmy about how his weekend was, because I think his vantage point on things over Chicago St. Patrick's Day weekend is probably a little different from ours, man. So how was your weekend?
It's more like how have my past few months been? Oh, yeah. Because like for Guinness, it's like St. Patrick's Day season, not just you know the week leading up to it. So I've been traveling like crazy man over my 15 states and doing trainings with distributors, doing events, and then so this past week and then like the lead up to St. Patrick's Day is almost like it's everything coming to fruition and almost like ideally, hopefully, more of like a celebration. Like the work has been done, you know, like all of our sales staff, it's like work has been done. But let's see, like I was up in Minneapolis on Wednesday for a Perfect Pint competition, flew back, had some media stuff on Thursday, and then the party on Friday, and then Saturday and Sunday are long, long days. Good days, but long days. So like you got the, you know, the downtown parade, the river dying, all that stuff, and then the Southside parade on Sunday. So, right. And I was at Elmhurst and Forest Park the week before. So a lot of parades. Chicago likes their parades.
Oh, man. That's funny. Yeah, and it all happens before St. Patrick's Day, where everyone is basically like, so excited to do it, and it all happens, and it's like, oh, St. Patrick's Day is kind of over, but it's really still a week away.
Yeah, a lot of other cities, most other cities are doing it, you know, like as we discussed on St. Patrick's Day or the weekend after St. Patrick's Day, and that is something unique about Chicago that we do it, you know, it's like 2 weeks leading up to it. You know, there's a big buildup, and. But actually, I like it because then St. Patrick's Day here is more akin to like what it traditionally is in Ireland. It's like it's a saint's feast day, you know. Right. It's like people would go to church and then go home and have a meal with their family. It wasn't like Americanized, you know. Mm-hmm. So now like other people around the world, like you know, they've taken that. That idea of, you know, celebrating and getting together has become more than just being Irish. It's about community. It's about, you know, celebration. It's about life. It's about spring, you know, being right around the corner, hopefully warmer weather, you know, all that stuff. So
yeah.
It's become beyond that.
Right. But the American influence has definitely spilled into the actual, like, day.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny to think about that. Like,
yeah. And then add to it, like, March Madness and stuff, too. Like, if that coincides, then... hey, always drink responsibly, but it can be a crazy time.
Yeah. And then next year it falls on Saturday.
Yeah.
This year it's on Friday, so next year it's on Saturday, so it could be
crazy. Or is it? Or is it Sunday because of leap year?
Oh, it's a leap year. Damn.
I haven't heard that term in a while.
Oh, that's right.
Well, in 4 years.
Yeah.
Pretty consistently.
Now, you being a local guy, what were your thoughts when you first heard about the next open gate brewery was going to come to Chicago?
Better be. Chicago. So I'm from the suburbs. So I'm not gonna say like even though I've lived in the city before, but you know, so Chicago land pride, shall we say?
I respect that, by the way.
Yeah. I'm not a poser. I'm not gonna be like, you know, like oh, I'm from Chicago.
And fucking carry. You're like, I'm Chicago all day, baby.
You know, yeah. I've experienced it too many people. It's like, oh, from Chicago. Where? Naperville. Okay. All right. So. To me, it makes sense. We've got our Baltimore brewery, Eastern Seaboard, access to about like 50 million people within like 5 hours. You know, I think that our leadership make the right decision to have it in Chicago, because you're talking about like, you know, there's a lot of pride in the beer culture, in the Irish diaspora culture, in the Midwest, and so it's going to be another hub, you know, and easier for people to get to than making the journey to Baltimore. So we're all really excited about it. I think it's a slam dunk. I mean, the facility is going to be great. It's situated, you know, between River North and West Loop and, you know, in the Fulton Market District. So it's like, it's a great location. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. You see a lot of breweries go like the other way where they have a brewery on one coast and the other coast, and having or like a West Coast then comes to Chicago, and it's sort of like the hub for the whole Eastern part of the city. So is this do you think this might be a stepping ground to a West Coast brewery, or it's kind of like Guinness is working their way across?
I don't think I'm.
But or is it or Chicago? It seems like.
I don't think that Chicago is going to be the end of it. I mean, assuming that this is successful, I don't think I'm going to be in any legal trouble saying this because we don't have any contracts signed or anything like that. Mm. But like, I don't think that this is the end of like Guinness in the United States. Mm. You know. Because what we've done in Baltimore is completely different than what we do in Ireland.
Yeah.
We, you know, all the beer that our core staple beers are still shipped over from Dublin. And it's just American brewers doing a whole bunch of different crazy stuff. Like they've brewed over 250 unique beers at that facility. Huh. Like everything from lagers to, you know, fest beers to IPAs to different barrel-aged beers. So it's going to be continue that new American tradition in Chicago. So like we have that, you know, historic Irish heritage and, you know, world-class stout brewery along with other beers. But then taking that heritage with the creativity of American brewers, you know, and doing different stuff. So I'm anxious to see what our new brewers come up with in Chicago.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I could totally see the continuing because Chicago makes sense on a population size and the Irish, the amount of people who are Irish in Chicago or relate to that. So it makes sense there. And so it's exciting. That's cool.
Yeah.
And so about the brewer, you mentioned the new brewer. She's Megan.
She was there. She was there at the party, I think.
Uh-huh. Yeah, she's one of her junior brewers at, I don't know, is that the correct term? She's
one of her head. There's brewmaster, then head brewer, then whoever's below head brewer.
Yeah, right? Peter Weens is our master brewer.
Assistant brewer.
Sean Brennan is our head brewer, and Meg is one of our, well, let's just say one of our other brewers. she took the job. In Chicago, we got another person who'll be working alongside her too. So, it's exciting. So it's a 10 barrel system. So it's not like a huge production facility. This is not meant for distributing. It's about supplying the tap room, supplying the facility there. So we'll have, these beers imported from Ireland. We'll have some beers that are brought over from Baltimore because it's a bigger facility, and already some established stuff, especially like our barrel aged stuff. And then they'll be brewing beer specifically for us in Chicago.
Okay.
So, and then, probably Chicago style hot dog, all that stuff. So.
Yeah. And then it sounded like if there was any like slam dunks or something, you could always ramp it up in Baltimore.
Correct.
If
yeah.
you need it.
Right? Yeah. Right. So, a lot of exciting stuff. It's going to be fun. And I'm anxious for people to try stuff beyond what they ordinarily we think of as Guinness. And it's I guess you become a victim of your own success. It's like, why is Guinness trying to do something different, just stick to what you know. It's like, you only say that to other breweries, it's like it's like Sam Adams, stop making new beers, or like Half Acre, why would you make another beer, like stay in your lane. It's like if we did that, historically speaking, we wouldn't have invented the world's first nitro beverage. If we did that, it would be that beer, and that's it. You always want to try to come up with something different. So that'll be part of what Chicago does.
What'd you see in Baltimore as far as like what people were buying? Was it like, were people buying more of the OG Guinness styles from the Baltimore location, you think? Or were they buying more of the stuff being made in Baltimore?
The latter. I mean, you got people who are rabid Guinness fans who, like, there's this one guy who drives down from New York like once a month. He makes like a 5-hour trip just to buy whatever any new releases that they're selling, So, what makes it unique is that, yeast being the lifeblood of the beer, the DNA of the beer, it's responsible for up to 78% of the flavor of the beer. We have used the same yeast for 126 years, something like that. And so like therefore like nothing can taste like a Guinness. And the yeast is very versatile. We don't use it for all of our beers, because like, we have like harp yeast and Smithwick's yeast as well. But like the Guinness yeast is very adaptable and because has been responsible for creating a lot of cool beers that, you know, we would ordinarily you wouldn't think of from Guinness.
That's true. You don't think about, like, it's a stout, right? So you can probably make ales, we can probably make IPAs, et cetera, et cetera.
We can lager with it. You know, so like we've made like, in essence, like Kolsch's more or less, you know, so look at the ale yeast, but lagered. So like that's what Guinness Blonde is. So Guinness Blonde's not a lager. We lager it, but it's not a lager, you know. Okay. So.
Yeah, you were just reading a story or info about the blonde, right?
Oh, yeah, how the blonde, this was a story from 2017. It was like, I think the blonde was made in by American brewers with Guinness yeast in Latrobe, Pennsylvania, I think they said. And then, I guess that's the precursor to the whole so, Baltimore thing.
Yeah, so it was at the time, our head brewer, Steve Kilcullen, City Brewery's head brewer, Joe Gruss, and they collaborated on the recipe, but it was designed for the United States, and then we didn't have the facility yet, so it was contract brewed in City Brewery, and then once we opened up the facility in Baltimore, then we pulled the production, you know, to in house. But yeah, it was very much collaboration and trying to decide a recipe for that was uniquely Guinness, but for the American market too.
Nice.
So.
Interesting. How did this Guinness, I keep the Nitro Guinness become the Guinness of the United States, you think? Like, was it the alcohol, like lower alcohol? You said prohibition.
Prohibition. Yeah. Like,
it just so it got lowered after prohibition.
Well, so Guinness Extra Stout, not foreign extra stout, but Guinness Extra Stout in Ireland is 4.2% too. It's basically the same base beer. The gas is different. So it's like almost identical.
Oh, you mean like nitro versus like CO2 kind of thing?
Correct. Yes. So it's like it's 100% CO2 as opposed to 75% nitrogen, 25% CO2 in the case of draft. When it comes to the United States, we bump up the alcohol content a bit to 5.6%. So the Guinness Extra Stout we get in the United States is different than the Guinness Extra Stout in Ireland by a matter of 1.2 or 4%. So after prohibition, the only breweries that made it were lager breweries, you know, so people are used to seeing those, you know, straw to golden beers. And then here we come back in after prohibition with this dark beer. And I think like we missed like three generations of drinkers, you know?
Sure.
So I think it was, it took a while to catch hold, but Extra Stout was just, I think it was too much for people. It was a beer that tasted too like had too much flavor. And then it wasn't until 1965 that when we created the concept of nitrogenation in 1959, but it didn't actually make it to the U.S. till 1965. Funnily enough, I discovered this wasn't even in the archives or whatever. In St. Louis, Missouri. St. Louis, Missouri was the test market for Guinness Draft. And then it was successful there, so we brought it to other major cities. So I think partly because it was different, it was unique, it was light, it was creamy, it was like nothing else on the market.
Okay.
So I mean, like, you know, you got your big lagers in the United States, but other than that, it was like Heineken, Bass, and Guinness were like the only real like imports that you could find on a mass scale, you know. So it became part of the pub culture, and so that's my best estimation of how it became like, oh, this is America's Guinness, you know what I mean?
Okay, that sort of makes sense, and that pushback on the alcohol when there's like crazy stats of pre-prohibition, people were drinking like a bottle of liquor every week, like that's how much they were consuming. Like if you think you consume a lot, you were not consuming as much consuming.
It's before TV and the internet, you know, like it's like, what are you, to read a book?
Yeah.
They were getting after it, huh?
So yeah, maybe that pushback of like, although people didn't stop drinking during prohibition, but still
got it from different sources.
Yeah.
Over the years, I've been to a handful of Guinness events, and there was this crazy Guinness event at some place. I forget where, but oh, anyway, it was my favorite pour of Guinness was this thing called 1759. It was in this matted bottle. It had a cork in a cage. Mm-hmm. It was super crazy, and I'm like, and I only had it once, so now it's the best thing ever, right? Because I only had it once. Oh, but do you have a favorite version of all these Guinness that you tried, or are you kind of past that point, or is there one that's just kind of jumps out at you? Is like that? This one's my jam.
If it's like one beer you drink for the rest of your life, I would take Guinness Draft. You know, because it's just sessionability of it, creaminess. If it's like your execution beer, or like one beer, I would drink that one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. Pours out. Speaking of that, Nick, we're out here.
Oh well, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, you can use those. These are our special goblet glasses.
Okay.
Yeah. So before the invention of nitro, see, this it's not every day that a 250-year-old brand comes to the West Loop, or that you can just talk about beer for like almost 300 years. But it wasn't always in cans. Before it was in, you just took the barrel and took it straight to the bar. Is that kind of what happened back
before? Yeah, so before this beers were created, so it was for our bicentennial. So 1759 is when Arthur founded the brewery. 1959, for our bicentennial, we wanted to put our extra stout on draft. Draft beer was becoming more popular, more prevalent from continental European brewers. And so we wanted to put our beer on draft. What we found is that famous Guinness yeast that I spoke of, one of its properties is that it is very active and highly flocculent. So it produces a good amount of carbonation. And so when we try to put it through like a regular draft system, it was just like half a glass of foam, and then so that's why we invented this concept of nitrogenation, where the nitrogen bubbles are smaller, so it allowed you to push it through because the gas doesn't want to escape as much. So prior to us being on draft, we had the beer maturing in huge wooden vats, English and French oak vats, and then racked them into casks. We had over 200 coopers making casks every single day. And you put that cask out into the world, around Dublin, around Ireland, around the world. Local publicans would then either slap it on the bar and pull it straight from the cask, or they would bottle their own beer, like in their cellars and stuff. Hmm. They put their own label on it. So like we have our label now, but we actually didn't actually put our name, bottle, can, or keg our own beer until 1959. And then so like, but it would be like, so the local publicans, to maintain quality control, so that we had, control over our beer, so there wasn't like, knockoffs or pirates out there. You would have to send your label back to the brewery so that we could keep track of it. So it'd be like Callahan Guinness, or White Guinness, it would say Guinness on there, but it would be whatever the local pub was. So, yeah, like we did, it was all wooden barrels all the way from 1759 to 1959. We stopped using wood in like the late 50s, early 60s.
That's wild. I didn't think it was that long.
No, yeah, right?
There's one of my favorite pictures. If I was going to do a PowerPoint presentation right now, one of my favorite pictures is of what we call the pyramids of Dublin. And it was just top pyramids basically of casks ready to be filled in the cooperage yard. And if you saw the picture I'm talking about, it looks like it would be like from like the late 1800s or something. It's like 1949, casks as far as the eye can see, in this Cooper jar. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. All right, so we got the
four extra stout. So yeah, this is the beer that made Guinness the biggest brewery in the world. So you've got on the nose, you got some nice butterscotch. You have this is when people, especially if people are afraid of the color and stuff, I'll ask them like two things. Number one, are you a coffee drinker? If they're a coffee drinker and they're a black coffee drinker, it's like there's no reason why you wouldn't like these beers.
Right.
If you like cream and sugar, maybe you don't like as much of the bitterness, But this beer actually has a lot of through lines with red wine too. And so if my mother-in-law I got her hooked on Foreign Extra Stout because she's like a red wine drinker, but she hates beer. It's like, oh, I don't like the taste of beer. Mostly it's the bitterness, you know? Yeah. But this one has like some stone fruit in there. You have like everything's amplified from Guinness Draft. So instead of chocolate, it's more like dark chocolate. Instead of coffee, it's more like espresso. And then you've got like some nice richness, butterscotch. This is... Welcome to the rest of the world, Guinness drinkers.
Blow my mind.
Right, yeah. You think just when you think you've understood the brand because you see it all the time, or you know they're steeped in tradition, but you feel like you've heard most of the stories. Just when you think you're at that point, then you start hearing stuff like this.
Yeah,
and you're like, oh well, shit, I know just a tip here.
Mm-hmm. 200. I mean, there's a lot of stories in like 264 years.
Yeah, in Ireland is. Which in Ireland, version?
Because it wasn't the beer that there was served to them. Yeah. You know, like they had the town porter, the what we call the Dublin porter, and then the country porter, and then they would eventually manifest itself in an extra stout. So like extra stout and then draft are the beers that were available like locally, because again it was all about keeping the beer fresh and the quality, consistency of the beer. And so you increase the alcohol content, increase the hop content so it didn't spoil when it's going all the way from Ireland to New Zealand, you know? Yeah. Conversely, as we were talking about, like, the, you know, people in, like, Nigeria would never get this. They're getting draft, that, yeah. You know? And so, like, they had the opposite perception of it, you know? Like, oh, Guinness is, like, it's almost like a status symbol. It's like, oh, if you can drink Guinness, like, you know, we don't like promote like, oh, you can, the bravado of like, oh, you can handle your, you know, you're a man if you drink this, but like, that's really the perception.
So it's a big beer compared to Guinness draft.
It's about, so 7.5%, like basically almost double the alcohol content, you know, so, but it drinks smooth. So you gotta be careful.
Yeah. You know, is there any conversation? I brought this up that when they did the media thing at the Chicago Brewery. Is there any conversation around like, you know, maybe offering an option to kind of try Guinnesses from around the world? Kind of how like McDonald's, the Gold McDonald's does his menu from around the world. Is there any conversation around that internally with Guinness?
It's a great idea. And I can tell you that it definitely has been talked about. I don't have any insight into like if it is going to happen or when it will happen, just logistically, like trying to get the beer from like, let's say our brewery in Nigeria, you know, so I will ask that question and get back to you on that. No. You know, but I mean, I mean, because people have asked about that too. Like, I'll talk about a beer that we brew, you know, in some other country, and it's like, well, can I taste it? I'm like, no. Because this is what we sent to the USA. It's something that I would love to see. You know, I also would love to see you know, what Guinness tastes like you know, out of the barrel. So like we'll sample this the Wild Ale, which you know, saw wood. But it'd be great to taste this beer, you know, in its historical clothes, shall we say, which would be like in wooden barrels, and then therefore you get like you know, like a different bacteria that helps sour the beer. Like we mimic that sourness with a different acidification, but just to see what it was like in the early 1900s, you know.
Oh,
well, before we started to keg our beer, you know, before 1959 then,
okay,
you know?
Okay.
So like just to see like what this would taste like from wooden casks.
Got it.
And too clean. Everyone's too clean today to get like, even if you were like trying to do it, it'd be like, well, yeah, we washed our hands then before we put the stuff in there. We're missing something.
Yeah. Historically speaking, beer is a pretty dirty process, you know. Yeah. But like we try to maintain that quality and consistency, you know. So
yeah.
Brett, have you had this beer before? Like, I mean,
I've had it, but it's been so long, and it was I don't even remember it.
Just out of curiosity, and you don't have to blow smoke on my ass, because like I didn't brew it, I talk about it. But like, I know you got, you know, especially in Chicago, we got, there's no shortage of breweries that have, like, you know, big barrel-aged stouts, you know, sometimes like upwards of 13 to 15%, whatever, you know. Having tasted this, where do you, I know they're, it's almost like an apples to oranges question, but like having tasted like those big cacao, vanilla,
sure,
you know,
yeah.
Like almost like more like really viscous.
Yeah, I guess beers. When it comes to like the bigger stouts, like I tend to go more in the like bitter coffee range, and I okay. enjoy those a little more. This one comes off, like you said, more wine and fruit forward to me. Yeah. So it feels different. It's very enjoyable, and you can relax with this one, where the other ones feel like maybe like a punch in your face sometimes, or like
right.
Different time, different place, I guess.
Sure, right, right.
But this yeah. does feel, to me, on the sweeter side.
Mm, yeah.
Brad's a psychopath. He drinks coffee black at night. He's
nuts. Well, you got to stay awake to do all that video editing.
Yeah, so. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I would, so, you know, putting my company hat, like one thing that I think our brewers do such a great job with is balance, you know? Mm-hmm. So, because like sometimes I'll have like a barrel-aged stout from somebody else and it's just like, I don't know if I can finish this. I think I might die, you know? Yeah. like where you got to share it, you know, like you're getting, you know, getting like a few ounces, but like, do you want to drink a whole bottle? You know, it can be, sometimes it can be a bit much, you know? So like I do tip my hat to our brewers for balance.
Right. You know? And it's 7.5%. Like there's a ton of flavor in there for that low of ABV. Like a lot of other stouts are like at least 10% sometimes.
Sure,
that,
right.
So getting it under 8.
And we can do that. Like we do that, you know, with like out of the Baltimore brewery, we've brewed barrel-aged stouts that are upwards of like 11%, but like they also don't drink like 11%. So it's like, again, always drink responsibly, but it's like, whoa, this is dangerous.
Like I think we had that, the mint chocolate Guinness.
Yeah, we've had that
and
before.
And that's like, that's up there.
11.
And that was almost like, that was like too much. Like, it was fun to try, but it was like, my Guinness a little lower.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when you're used to the sessionability of like, oh, having some, you know, a few pints at the pub or whatever, and then all of a sudden you have a beer that's like almost three times the alcohol content. It's like, hold on a second. This is not what I'm used to, you know?
Yeah. I'll tell you something, man. There's an elegance to this that I wasn't expecting. Like, we talked about the bitter roastiness, but then that underlying layer of, like, chocolate-covered fruit, since I hadn't had it in a while, was kind of surprising, and I liked the nice lingering effect, too.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, it's way more fun when brewers can pull out flavors without doing the pastry thing and just literally adding stuff, right? Like just having, right?
Yeah. So this is, I guess this speaks to the complexity of the yeast and simple ingredients, barley, hops, yeast, water. Like we're not adding coffee to it. We're not adding chocolate. We're not adding cacao nibs. You're not adding vanilla to it. You know, there aren't any adjuncts. It's barley, hops, yeast, water, and the yeast and our brewer's expertise help draw those flavors out of the beer. Yeah. So like that butterscotch, it's coming from the yeast, you know, the stone fruits, you know, they're coming from the yeast.
Yeah. And your travels, have there been any like whiskeys or bourbons that you like to pair with any of the Guinness releases?
Yeah. Well, so we have no shortage of riches with Diageo. So Guinness,
like, that's right. I forget
so
about
like,
Diageo.
So Guinness is, you know, and people will wonder about that, like, oh, Guinness is owned by Diageo or something, you know, but actually Guinness and Grand Metropolitan formed Diageo in, was it 1997, I think. So like Guinness is Diageo. Diageo is Guinness, but we have, it's the largest spirits company in the world. So we have more scotches than anybody, you know? But as far as like, we have bourbons, but, up until recently we didn't have an Irish whiskey. So we had Bushmills, but sold it, I want to say it was like 2004, doesn't matter, early 2000s. And so we haven't had like an Irish whiskey to pair with Guinness in a long time until we started to distill Roe & Co., which came out two years ago, year and a half, 2 years ago.
Rowan Cola. I feel like we heard of this. I feel like we talked about it.
You can get it at Chicagoland. You can get it at Binney's. Okay. So we're doing it like right across the street. It's a blended whiskey now. It's pretty darn good. I mean, like within the company, I mean, we have Bullet. We have, you know, like I said, so many different scotches. So like, I guess it depends on which Guinness we're talking about. So like, I think that you could, do worse pairing a really nice scotch, like an Oban or something with, for an extra stout, you know, whereas I wouldn't go necessarily in scotch territory with Guinness Draught because, it is so light really, yeah. You know, you don't want to overpower it. So, but, you know, sidecar with a Bullet, like not bad, not a bad combo.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right on.
Cause you get the sweetness from the bourbon, sweetness of the malt from the stout. So, it works out.
Yeah.
Man. All right, do we press on?
Press on.
I'm feeling great, man. Let's do this. You know, I'm 1,000 miles from the day job, man. You know?
We slammed our extra.
All right, so this one.
Speaking of barrels,
one our head brewer Sean Brennan comes from Jolly Pumpkin in Michigan, okay. So he is he's just an expert when it comes to barrel aging beer, and so we're lucky to have him. And this is one of his babies. So you've got, I don't want to talk too much about it until you guys just smell it and taste it. Cause I don't want to sway you one way or the other.
Okay.
But just take a good whiff. I would say like do your covered sniff, you know, your Cicerone covered sniff. And just let those aromas hit you. Right. And if that's you're, fine, you know, this immediately takes me to Belgium. But
sour cherry, man.
But I don't want to sway you guys one way or the other. But this is like an old world style beer.
Crazy.
So I mean, but you wouldn't, especially drinking the first two beers we had, you wouldn't expect necessarily something like this from Guinness, right?
Yeah.
But we're a brewery, so make beer.
Like that's what it should have said on the cups. So we're a brewery.
Oh, instead of
you're a brewery, make beer. Because what did it say? Make it and dream it or something.
That came from one of our brewers in Dublin, Peter Simpson. He's the head of our opening brewery in Dublin. So that was like the impetus of it, like coming, having people be able to come in and taste beers from Guinness that are different than what they think of as Guinness.
Yeah.
And I think he said it in like an offhanded comment in an interview, like, oh, if we dream it, we can brew it. And then that became like a catchphrase.
Man, I haven't had a sour beer like this in a while. Like our sour beers have become kettle sours.
Pretty much. Yeah.
No, but this is the real thing. Barrel aged with some of our barrels. Lacto, Brett, and... Like I just think that I don't want to put words in anybody's mouth, but I think they knocked it out of the park.
It's really nice. I like that. When they're done right, you get that Sour Patch Kid vibe, where it's like, you know, it gives you the tart kind of tangy, but then it kind of eases you into sweet.
Yeah, when you get creamy vanilla, you know, it's like soft carbonation too. So, it was when I was shipped for these, I was like, ah, this is. It was really nice, and I saved one for you.
Oh my gosh, so nice!
Yeah, man, I'm reading it now. It's like the 4th anniversary barrel aged wild ale from Baltimore, Maryland.
That's great. It's like the mouthfeel is really nice on that. It's like, I don't know, it's thick but light at the same. I don't know. Not just for anyone listening or watching. It's hard to describe because it just delights the palate. I guess.
There's a balance, you know. But there's a lot going on, but like. It's still creamy, and you get the flavor from the barrel, like the, you know, and it's, but it's not like, while there's bread, it's not like funky farmhouse, you know.
No, yeah.
You get the sourness, you get that you know, that nice acidity, but it doesn't give you heartburn. Which right. is like when it's like kettle sour is just like it's just a quick way you're doing it, you know. It's like no offense to anybody who's doing kettle souring, you know, like we do it too, but. It's like, it's the shortest way to you know, get to the end result, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like, do you want to microwave your steak or do you want to cook it properly?
No, that's actually really good. That's actually a really good way of looking at it. Yeah.
So are these the kind of things we could possibly see from Chicago or not?
A heck yeah. Yeah. I mean, it might take a while for us to do, you know, I don't know if we have the the space in our new facility for barrel aging, but we can bring it from Baltimore. You know, yeah. We have a ton of space there. But like everything, you know, lagers, pale ales, IBAs, everything between, you know, like, I think one of the things that our brewers have done a great job with and try to do very consciously is brewing with the rhythm of the seasons too. So yeah. You're going to get like, you know, a Fest beer, you're going to get like a Helles Lager, you're going to get like a, you know, a Marzen, you know, either from our new brewery or from Baltimore. Cause they brewed those classic styles and then they've done some funky stuff like with the jalapenos and all y'all adjuncts and stuff, you know? So there'll be some fun stuff. And then there'll be, you know, some, our interpretation of classics.
Right. I think that's good to see because we always think of like when Ballast Point came to Chicago, they had
not too far from where this Guinness.
Yeah, they had like 13 Sculpins, and they had a 3-barrel system.
They had like 60 draft lines. Yeah.
So they were doing beer, but not enough new beer to excite anyone to like come there.
Yeah,
and I think that's people were I think maybe on the outside concerned like, oh, we're just gonna go to the Guinness Brewery and get Guinness Draft and foreign like stout and be like, why would I go back? But hearing that you're going to have all these new beers and beers from Baltimore too, that
keep in mind also food, bakery, like coffee too, like, you know, but okay. I think, and you know, not to speak disparagingly over another brewery or anything like that, but I feel like being from the Chicago area, there's that, again, that civic pride. And then you got this, you know, we already have Lagunitas, and then you got like, you know, Ballast Point come in, and Revolution, Half Acre, you know, some of the, you know, like OG, like craft breweries in Chicago. It's like, I think that, you know, like my brothers would like go to Binny's and they're taking out a Chicago beer instead of something from the West Coast.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
I don't even walk down the other aisles. Like, there's just the Chicago beer. I don't even think Binny's has the other beer.
Yeah, what are you talking about? So I think that there's like that Midwest pride, like the Third Coast pride, you know, as some of you might say. That being said, like, you've got some amazing staples coming from the West Coast, coming from the East Coast. Chicago is the most heavily distributed beer area in the entire country. We have an embarrassment of riches, you know. So it's a great time to be a beer drinker. You know, you get to sample a lot of different stuff. Whereas like I've lived in LA, I've lived in New York, and some beer just doesn't cross the Mississippi one way or the other, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, but we're lucky that we get everything, you know, you walk down the aisle of Binny's and you've got East Coast style beers. You have West Coast style, you have the UK, Ireland, you've got, imports from Europe, and then you've got the Midwest beer.
That's true. I think that's something we forget, just drinking local beer, that we have access to all this other stuff. And like our local beer is so good that like, we're like, I don't care what Tennessee is doing.
Well, but also, I mean, like fresh beer tastes better, you know, like beer is food stuff. So like, why not get a beer from down the street, you know, then. You guys know better than I do, but correct me if I'm wrong, but like we don't have as many breweries per capita as Portland, but we have like the most brewery like square footage, I think, like was one of the guys.
I think we
like,
might have passed Portland.
Now past Portland.
Include the whole state, right? Or Chicagoland.
I think it might. But there's like some, there's almost like, there's like somewhere between like 60 and 70 breweries just within the city limits alone.
Yeah.
You know, maybe even more, but.
Yeah, when you count the suburbs, it doubles. And then I think the Guild said there's over 300 in the state.
Doesn't surprise me.
It's so bizarre. Like, I couldn't name all 300.
Yeah.
And we do a show every week about local beer. I can't name 300 breweries, man.
And like, I'll bring up the question so you guys don't even have to. Yeah. Like, there might be some people, especially like some purists, who'll say like, you know, oh, like, you know, what's Guinness doing coming in Chicago and like, you know, like import. But like, people don't really have a bad thing to say about Guinness. You know, maybe they haven't drank it in a while. You know, but what I will tell you is that in my tours around all the states I cover and meeting brewers, a lot of times it's the beer they drink after they brew their beer. You know, it's like they go home, they drink Guinness because this one, because it's like it's a, you know, full flavored beer, but you know, only 4.2%. You know, it's only 126 calories for 12 ounces. You know, so I like to say, rising tide raises all ships. Like, mm-hmm. we're just a bigger ship.
Yeah, there's certain bars where I know they do a good Guinness pour. It's like, oh, I'm here, I'm gonna get a Guinness.
Yeah.
And so
we over-index on the on-premise. Like, while people will buy this, you know, for home, whatever. If you're a Guinness fan, you want to be out at the pub. You want to be, you're probably a pretty social person, you know, like you want to be with friends, you want to, you know, celebrate life, celebrate, you know, being out. And so like that, and also, especially like the theater of that crafted pour, you know, it's something that is very unique to Guinness. It's the only beer you can identify from across the room without having smelled it or tasted it.
True.
Like you can't like, it's like, that's a Guinness, you know, but you can don't say like, that's a X, Y, or Z lager, you know?
Yeah.
Unless it's like in a Stella glass.
Oh, yeah, know? That's right. Forget about Stella. It is visually stimulating, the Guinness experience at
Ondraft. Hey, you said it, not me. Very stimulating.
Yeah, you brought up a point about Baltimore versus Chicago, just to frame it for people. Like, Baltimore is a much bigger scenario than Chicago's
the brewery.
Setup.
The brewery itself.
Sorry, yeah, the yes. Open Gate Brewery in Baltimore. Yeah, yeah. Versus the one in Chicago.
Yes, yeah. And people ask, like, why Baltimore? Well, you know, how did that come about? So, again, Guinness being Diageo, being part of Diageo, part of it was, like, strategic in that we wanted a place on the East Coast because of just the population density. And then part of it was because we had the land already. Like, so it's an old Seagram's distillery okay. that we converted one of the buildings into the brewery itself, and we just had, we have the land. It's up at the airport. It's not like in Baltimore, like proper. It's not like, you know, in the city. It's on a wide swath of land. We got a ton of space there. So we have being American, I don't do well with the metric system. I don't think any of us do. But so we don't deal with like it's hectoliters. So it's like we have 100 hec brewery there. The like mass produced beer, whereas like here it's like we're gonna have like a 10 barrel system, so completely different setup. We have a smaller system in Baltimore as well for to feed the tap room for experimental beers, but then we have like the production facility, whereas like we do not have the space in Chicago for a production facility.
Okay,
at least not right now.
So that makes sense on that level, but also an outsider here is Guinness is in Baltimore, Boston area. You'd be like, oh, yeah, of course. Like it feels right.
Yeah, so. Yeah. So it's a fun place to visit. I think Baltimore gets a bad rap. There's a lot of there's cool areas like in the harbor. The Inner Harbor is really historic and cool. You know?
Sagamore Rise there.
In Baltimore area. Mm-hmm. And the facility is great. So it's like I said, it's not it's an Uber ride. Or if you're passing by, like if you fly to Baltimore, you pass by the brewery on the way from the airport to the city itself. But we have like some great restaurants within the brewery itself, event space. They do concerts, all that stuff. It's pretty cool.
Nice. Cool. So when is Chicago opening?
It already opened. So when we initially signed the lease, the hope was that it was going to be open for this past St. Patrick's Day, this week. But so many different factors cause it to be pushed back. So ideally, like I've heard people say late July, I'm just going to say to be safe, halfway to St. Patrick's Day, you know, so like late August, early September.
Okay.
To me, I have no power over this whatsoever. No one needs to listen to me, but I think it makes sense. Like, you know, celebrate halfway to St. Pat's, new opening of the brewery. I don't know if I want to be outside in like, you know, like late July with it being sticky, and I'm a sweater, you know, so it's like, you know,
mosquitoes,
too hot, yeah. You know, yeah. So I think it makes sense for like
yeah, you know, open as it cools late, down a little bit when you're like, hey, come drink Guinness. Yeah. Not like, hey, yeah. It's 100, come drink well, Guinness.
that being said though, you know, as I mentioned before, you know, the amount of Guinness being drunk in Africa.
Yeah.
So like dark beer actually has like a cooling effect on your body, like spicy food. So that's why you find spicy food around the equator. You find like dark beer, like we have most of our breweries around the equator. Yeah. Because like people, you know, they're not. This beer, you always have to, like Guinness Draft always has to be served cold because otherwise too much CO2 explodes out of it. You can't have a nitrogenated beer not cold. But this beer, you could drink room temperature if you wanted to.
The foreign stout.
You know, so like people will just drink it like, you know, in the Caribbean, in Malaysia, in Africa. Right. And it has like a cooling effect in your body.
That makes sense. But it's one of those facts where it's like.
But most Americans, you know, it's like they, you know, you drink with the rhythm of the seasons, and they think that stout cannot be drunk in the summertime. It's like that's a fall beer, that's a winter beer, you know. So, you know, we deal with that all the time. It's like, oh, I love drink Guinness, you know, I always have Guinness, but like in October, it's like, yeah, you can drink it year round if you want.
Damn. All right. Anything else, Nick?
No, West Loop. All of a sudden, West Loop's on the Google, McDonald's, and Guinness, which is kind of blowing my mind a little bit here. No.
Well, Google's moving downtown.
They're moving downtown?
They bought the Thompson Center.
Oh. Yeah, you're right about that. Yeah. I think I like what you said about it's an opportunity to just kind of showcase the range of the Guinness yeast strain. That's not something I thought about at all during any of this. Mm-hmm. And, yeah. And if there was 200-plus breweries being brewed in Baltimore, that'd be cool too, just kind of understand, you know, like Guinness empowering like American brewers to kind of do their thing and then kind of make a connection to this 200-year-old brand.
Yeah, it's not like we have our American brewer team, they're not, I mean, while they definitely work alongside and with the Dublin Brewmasters, they're not directly like, you have to make these beers, you know, like they have like a free reign of creativity, and like so like Sean Brennan and Todd Perkins, one of our other brewers, they sometimes just have an idea and it's like, let's do it, and that's like the impetus of so many different beers that they come up with, you know. So it's fun, you know. It's, hey, I always try one thing. I always try something once, you know. Like maybe not every beer is everyone's jam, but like that's with anything, you know. Maybe everyone's like food isn't everyone's jam, you know.
Sure,
but it's not like. If I like roasted Brussels sprouts and somebody doesn't, it's not like roasted Brussels sprouts a fault, you know. It's like it's just food, it's just a beer, you know. So we're not trying to change the world, just just trying to make different beer and have people enjoy it.
Makes sense.
Cool.
Awesome. So we're gonna be able to find out more as the opening happens.
So. Yeah. So you can we have the website live now. Okay. And Instagram handle Guinness Brewery Chicago CHI. So please follow us there.
That letter restriction, you can't spell it all over.
Yeah, I'm rhymes with pint, because I found that nothing, just like orange or silver, nothing rhymes with the word pint.
Okay.
So I was wondering what that was. That's funny.
I had to come up with a creative name. They wanted us to use something different, so here we go. There, you know, that's the best I can come up with. So you can follow me at Rhymes with Pine. I'll have different news about Guinness and, you know, just all things Guinness and everything. And, yeah, so it's exciting stuff to come in Chicago.
Cool. I can't wait, yeah. Nick, where can people find you?
Hey, man. I'm on Twitter at Nicosio.
And I'm on Twitter at BRAD, Chicago Beer Pass, Instagram, Twitter. And we'll be back, and we have a backlog of episodes going up. So hopefully you enjoy this interview, Two Hounds Red, other adventures. We got Tinley Park to talk about on the next week, Peace, Old Irving, Guinness again, I'm sure.
Yeah. Jimmy Callahan, this was very cool, man. Thank you for coming out.
Thanks for having me, guys. This is awesome. Thank you.
Cheers.
Cheers.